Good morning. It's time for another conversation. This is High Desert Dialogue, conversations with Regina and Roxanne, here on Talk 960. We're keeping it local with high desert issues, events, and interesting people. You can hear us Saturdays at 9 a.m. and Sundays at 8 a.m. on Talk 960 and talk960.com. Let's start talking.
Well, good morning, Roxanne. How are you?
Good morning, Regina. Glad to see you again.
Yes, it's a wonderful weekend again in the high desert.
We are moving through it.
I know. And you know what? I am excited because this gentleman who we have on today, I've been trying to get for over 3 months.
Well, we finally got him. So we're looking forward to
hearing. Finally got him. Yay. Right? So we're going to jump in before he decides he doesn't want to be here. But we're going to jump into this interview this morning with Brad Porries, who is from MDAQMD. Let me tell you what that stands for in case you don't know. Mojave Desert Air Quality Management District. He is the executive director and the air pollution control officer. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Okay. And you know what, Roxanne? I remember when he first came here. Mm-hmm. And can you believe it's been 9 years? Nine years that he has been here. So we want to say welcome to Conversations with Regina and Roxanne. Brad, I am glad to see you and have you here.
And why has it taken 9 years to see you again, Brad?
A little busy over there. But I'm
controlling the air, Roxanne.
I know. Well, you've been busy, I mean, with the fires and things over here in the high desert. So, yes.
There's
a lot going on. And seriously, we really do want to talk about. So I would just like to start off because we assume that everybody understands what Mojave Desert Air Quality Management District does, but maybe not. And so can you tell us what is the primary role? What is the agency all about?
Sure. I'd like to tell you a lot more than that.
Okay.
Also want to say thank you for inviting me. I know it has been a while since you've been asking me. I appreciate being here with you both.
We're glad you're here.
Share our message. Not too often we get asked to go into a little bit more depth of what we do, so appreciate the invitation for sure. So we are considered a special district under California state law.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a regulatory agency, and our primary role is maintaining and improving ambient air quality in our jurisdiction, which ranges about 20,000 square miles. So we're the second largest landmass air district in the state of California.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So some of the things we do on a day-to-day basis is permitting efforts for stationary sources. Examples of those are like gas stations, power plants, aggregate facilities. List goes on and on. Military bases.
Yeah. So, like, say, Brad, before a gas station opens up, they'd have to contact your office.
We're one of the offices they do have to contact and get an authority to construct, and then a permit to operate that facility. Gas station, as an example, has a lot of emissions associated with it. Mm-hmm. Toxic emissions.
Yeah.
Benzene and gasoline is very toxic, so they have very stringent control measures by which they have to have vapor recovery on. So we do go through the permitting, one of the agencies that go through a permitting process with them. And it's similar to larger facilities as well, like a power plant that may have a source of emissions or controls. We permit anything that controls or emits an air contaminant.
So that how does that relate to businesses? Because I always hear especially at a lot of the economic summits and things that are talking about development in the area, I always hear that, we are a good area in terms of the air quality to work with, right? So what all goes into that?
That's a great question. There's some misinformation that gets out there sometimes because of our proximity to down the hill, the South Coast Air Quality Management District. And there's two different levels of attainment status between down the hill and up the hill, if you will. And ours is a little bit cleaner than the South Coast Air Basin. So depending on your designation of attainment of an air pollutant determines how stringent your rules have to be in order to make the move to try to come into compliance with those national ambient air quality standards. So up here, our regulatory framework is a little bit less stringent than it is down the hill.
Okay.
It's been my board of directors' priority to, and one of our mantras is that we like to have a balanced approach to our regulatory and compliance efforts and work with businesses,
mm-hmm.
One-on-one with our businesses to ensure not only prior to them developing that they understand all the rules and regulations they need to meet, but it's our job to educate them on that as well as help them stay in compliance as they operate.
So that leads me to a question. Is there a certain type of business or size of business, let's say, that's considering moving here, right? Is there are certain types of businesses or sizes of businesses that would have to interact with your agency?
It really depends on the type of operation or like if it's a large manufacturing company.
Got it.
Or
okay.
It depends on the amount of equipment they have for controlling any emissions they may have, or if they're producing something that has emissions as well that's being emitted. So it could range from simply very small storage tank at a golf course that fuels vehicles at the golf course, all the way up to a Costco, for instance, using the gasoline station analogy.
Brad, like an electric charging station?
We can get into that too. Electric charging stations, we don't necessarily permit those, where, you know, your city planners will do that. But we do provide incentive funding for the installation and the procurement of EV charging stations.
Okay.
We're one agency that does that.
That's why I'm glad you're here, because I think there has been some misconception about businesses and what you guys do and, you know, that. And so I think you're helping to clear some of that up. I know at least I'm learning. So that's a good thing. Now, your role and responsibility as executive director and also this air pollution control officer, what does that consist of? What are you responsible for?
So I run the day-to-day operations of the organization, and which is made up of several different sections. I know we've talked about focus mostly on permitting, but we also have a compliance section with which I have staff that go out to each of the individualized permitted facilities to ensure they're following the rules and regulations in their permit to make sure that they're not polluting the air, so to speak.
Right.
We also have a grants team that gives out incentive funds for exactly what we just talked about, mm-hmm. for electric vehicle charging. We also replace dirty school buses with clean electric school buses.
Mm.
We do off-road heavy-duty Carl Moyer projects, replacing you know off-road equipment to cleaner burning equipment. We've also implemented some federal grants to replace dirty diesel locomotives in our area.
Oh, wow.
With electric switchers. We also have a monitoring division that monitors air quality. We have six stationary monitoring sites throughout our whole jurisdiction that monitors air quality. That information is what is the basis of how we show we're coming into attainment with the National Ambient Health Standards, health-based standards. We also have, we have our fiscal team. We have our public information office,
right,
which Marshall here. It is our PIO.
Hi, Marshall. He's also in the studio.
Yes.
And we have several different branches with what we have to do, right?
So approximately how many employees?
We have approximately 40 FTE.
Wow.
Yeah, we've grown a little bit.
Team, how many make up the compliance?
In our compliance team, it's eight people, eight individuals. In our compliance,
that
we have
out in.
And we have eight as well in our engineering permitting.
Okay.
That write the permits, you know, review the applications and write the permits. Monitoring, we have four in our monitoring division. We have three in our grants and IT, or three in our grants and two in our IT. And then it goes from there. We have our, you know, administration and others. So
I have a question, because something you said spurred a little thought. Are you guys in any way involved in that inland port that's taking place out in Barstow?
The big project?
Yes.
Okay. So we are very supportive of that. We have a cooperative agreement with BNSF.
Okay.
Seeking to get grant funds where available to help offset cost of going to cleaner equipment. Not only the big project, hasn't been built yet, as you know.
Right.
But it's going to be state-of-the-art. A lot of the yard movement is going to be with electric vehicles within there. That's part of their project as proposed already.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have the existing Barstow Yard intermodal facility there. And we're working with them to try to get grant funds to switch out some of the older equipment in that yard with newer, cleaner equipment. But, yeah, we have a cooperative relationship working with them. We talk often.
Okay.
And as you know, there was a lot of efforts going on with the federal waiver request of EPA on locomotives.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a big role in if the facility was going to move forward or not.
Right. Right.
So we do communicate with them quite often.
Great.
Also, too, Brad, in regards to the LA fires, was your agency involved or still is involved in helping out with that situation?
So that's not in our jurisdiction. Okay. That was South Coast Air Quality Management District. However, we have to track smoke impacts, right, from any wildfire because it can travel great distances. So
right.
Our team, our monitoring division and our planning rule development division tracks smoke patterns to make sure that the smoke from those fires weren't negatively impacting our area, which thankfully they were not. The wind patterns mm-hmm. were just right to keep it out of our area.
Okay.
We do. Besides informally, we do assist our colleagues in other air districts where if they need in-kind requests for staffing or any other help that they
right.
have. But South Coast happens to be the largest air quality management district in the state. So they have about as many people as I think the state air resources
right.
board. So mm-hmm. they have a lot of resources available to them.
Yeah.
But we do. I also sit on my state board of directors, the CAPCOA, that's mm-hmm. California Air Pollution Control Officers Association. I'm vice president this year and legislative chair. So
wow.
I get an opportunity monthly to meet with my colleagues to talk about things of common interest and I'm putting forth efforts in the legislature to make sure the air quality is protected statewide, too.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Now, you know, as we were talking, it did come to mind that there are some misconceptions, right, about mm-hmm. the agency and your regulatory authority, I guess. And so can you help us to better understand or clear up some of those misconceptions? Common misconceptions.
Yeah, I think some of the common misconceptions happens when businesses from outside the area may be coming in and mm-hmm. looking to locate in our area. They think they have to deal with South Coast Air Quality Management District and their rules and regulations because they don't understand the boundaries where the jurisdictional boundaries are.
Okay.
And so that tends to be a hurdle we have to overcome because once those businesses find out that, you know, it's a little bit less stringent up here, it makes it easier for them to facilitate them locating to the high desert,
right.
for one. So we try to get that information out to them. There's also misconceptions like on burn days, for instance, is another good example. During
yeah.
the winter months, like the mountainous areas like up in Big Bear, which is not in our jurisdiction, that's in South Coast. That's in South Coast area. That's not our jurisdiction. But sometimes they get confused on where to get information on, is it a proper burn day? Is, you know, if they have a complaint, a community-based complaint, who
mm-hmm.
they contact,
okay.
which agency.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a continual battle that we try to get information out to show that if you're in this area, you deal with us. If you're not, then you deal with South Coast AQ. And we'll help them facilitate them getting in contact with the appropriate agency if we need to.
So how can people actually, which is a good point, I think, how can people actually understand what the
jurisdictional boundaries are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably our website and our socials. They can contact us through our socials. And if you go onto our website, we do have a map of our jurisdiction on there.
Okay.
Or where, you know, it's kind of a on a macro scale, but it would help them get a good picture. Get a good picture.
Get you a seat at the
table. And obviously they can always contact our agency and we'd be happy to help somebody out.
Okay. And before we end, we're going to get that website and the a phone number or contact number for those who might be interested in just checking that out.
I think you have a Facebook page too, right, Brian?
We do.
Okay.
We do have a Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter.
It's all social media.
Yeah, all social media.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
I'm looking at Marshall because he's the one that maintains those
okay,
for us.
Okay, we'll get that all from Marshall before we end. I do want to kind of talk about community involvement, because I know you guys are very involved with the community, but we may not really know how or where to find those imprints. Can you share a little bit about your philosophy or position on being involved in community?
Right. So this started, our elevated level in the community started, I would say, when I took over about almost 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was important for me to get integrated into the community, to get information out quickly. And Marshall, as our PIO, it facilitates a lot of that communication, whether it be through the Chamber of Commerce, whether it's going out into meetings of Rotaries, whether it's going to the school districts, meeting with superintendents, whether it's any, community meeting. We try to, if there's a gathering, we usually try to have a presence there to share information, whatever the current going on, or just to answer questions people may have, like you're having right now.
Right. To be accessible to community.
Right.
Yeah.
And we are the main sponsor of MEEK. I know you're interested
so
in MEEK.
Tell us about that.
So MEEK is the Mojave Environmental Education Consortium. And it's been in place for well over, it's pushing 25, 30 years almost now.
Wow.
So it's housed in our office. It's not my staff. MEEK has their own staff that run the program.
Mm-hmm.
But it puts on workshops for our teachers up here. It collects revenue from sponsors to provide, example, like environmental bus bucks so that we can fund bus trips for students to go to, an ecological tour or something. They have a revenue place where they can go and seek funds to be able to facilitate that for the children. And we do workshops. They do workshops. We have an annual conference that we co-sponsor with MEEK,
which is outstanding.
And all the revenues from that go into the MEEK program to help sustain some of the programs they have. I think coming up in April is the annual banquet where we announce Teacher of the Year, Student of the Year. The community engagement, we strive to be transparent and we want to be accessible to the community. And if there are air quality concerns or questions, we encourage people to reach out to us.
Always be vigilant, right?
Yeah.
Always be vigilant. I can only be so far across 20,000 square miles, my staff. So we rely on the community if they see something to say something. For complaints or whatnot, then we rely on them to help us do our job. So it's important that they be aware when they're out there. Thank you so much.
So thank you again.
And thank you for the invitation. It was a pleasure to be here.
Well, good morning, Roxanne.
Good morning, Regina. Hi, everybody.
It is wonderful to be here in the high desert this time of year.
I know. Officially, we can say to our listeners, we are in spring.
We are in spring, and it is spring and summer, my favorite time of year.
Exactly,
yes,
right.
So I'm a very happy person right now. And Roxanne, I'm really excited to have this guest today. We haven't actually had an opportunity to meet her, but we've heard a lot about her.
Yeah, and this is a new center,
and
I'm understanding.
It's a new center that she's going to be telling us about. But I'm excited to welcome Jane Montgomery to Conversations with Regina and Roxanne. She's been teaching chemistry at Victor Valley College since 2014. Can you believe that?
Wow, you're really smart, Jane.
I know. Those are classes that we definitely miss.
I like biology, but I don't think I've ever taken a chemistry class.
Well, no, I'm
class.
Not going anywhere near. And in addition to that, Jane is the vice president of the Academic Senate.
Mm.
She's also the faculty facilitator for professional development. That's a mouthful, right? And the reason she's here today is to talk to us because she is the manager for Victor Valley College's LGBTQ Pride Center.
Very nice. And this is a
and
new
also,
facility.
And also, I believe
okay.
she manages that grant that oversees that.
Mm.
So we really want to extend a joyful welcome.
Hi.
To Jane. Welcome to Conversations with Regina and Roxanne. And we're just going to jump in, Jane. We are excited about this upcoming event and what's taking place on April the 4th. Can you share with us what's happening over at VVC, or what will be happening at VVC on April the 4th?
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is so wonderful. I really appreciate y'all taking some time to make this announcement and share with our community everything that's happening around the Pride Center. So, yeah, we have a grant from the state. It's from the California Community College's Chancellor's Office that gives us a portion of money every year to support LGBTQ plus students. We've received this grant for, I think, 3 years in a row. It's not permanent, but we're really happy to have some funding. So one of the things that we've decided to do with our grant is to open this Pride Center. It's going to be opening. The grand opening is going to be on April 4th here on Victory Valley College campus. And folks in the community can join to support the VVC students and just celebrate the opening of this new space for our students.
Great. And so tell us a little bit about what time, where the center will actually be located, for those who are interested and may want to come out in support.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yes. So the event will begin at 12 p.m. noon, and we're estimating maybe it'll last until around 5. It'll be open, so just kind of come by when you can, and you can tour the center. It's located in the Liberal Arts Building, Building 30, located right on the pond here at Victor Valley College. And it's going to be inside of that building. There's a multicultural center already, and then there's the Umoja Center.
Yes.
And so the Pride Center will be located right next to those two other centers in that same building.
And Jane, this is going to be open to the public, so not just students, but the whole community is invited.
Yes, we would love to have folks from the community come and join us. The objective here is to really celebrate the students and welcome students on the VVC campus. Mm-hmm. And having the community be part of that would be wonderful.
That's great. Now, Jane, tell us a little bit about how the Pride Center came into being and what will actually be offered or provided to the student population there.
Yes, thank you for that question. It's so important. The Pride Center was sort of a vision that I had when I was first offered the position to be the manager of this grant money. I really see students at Victor Valley College wanting a place to belong, a mm-hmm. space where they can feel comfortable to be themselves and welcomed. So that was sort of the idea that I had in mind. I've had a lot of help along the way, in particular from two community members, Mario Novoa and William Smith, who sort of introduced me to Jose Saria, who was the first openly gay person in, as far as we know, in the country to run for public office.
Mm.
And he ran in San Francisco, and he really just has a wonderful, inspiring story of standing up for gay rights and the LGBTQ plus community for decades. He did pass in 2013, I believe it was. And so we're just really happy to open the center in honor of Jose Saria, and to carry on the spirit of, you know, making spaces for people in the queer community to be themselves and be accepted for who they are.
I'm excited as well. I think it's hugely important.
So, yes, it's critical. I mean, research shows that students who feel like they belong in college persist and they're more successful. We have a unique community here of people who, at this age, you know, when they're at community college, are sort of transitioning in a lot of ways from adolescence into adulthood and just needing support in growing into their identities and into their adulthood. And then as they're doing that through through their education, it can really impact whether or not they continue and pursue that. So if we can sort of help students find a place to belong through the Resource Center, where we'll have weekly office hours for mental health. We'll have club meetings. We have computers, and we'll have resources in there for studying and for learning more about the different community resources that can support them, not just in college, but just in their lives, in students' lives in general. We also plan to have a library of pamphlets and educational materials, but also books and stories and resources of folks who have been in the same situation, who have walked this path before.
Yes.
And just, just in general, just as many resources as we can to kind of make it a useful place.
Just shared experiences, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's wonderful. I'm excited, too, to hear that you're actually in Building 30, because that's coming quite the hub for culture,
yes.
Right? Different cultures.
Yes.
So where it's safe space for whatever that culture may be for people to navigate to, but it's also where you are together, right?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Even though there may be these unique things that are different, it also provides an opportunity for togetherness, right? And unity.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I think that, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I was just going to say, you know, a lot of times folks coming to community college are here for classes and then they have to leave campus. They probably have jobs. They have families that they're taking care of. And so it isn't always easy, because they're not here for as much time as if they say were living on campus at a university,
right,
to make connections and to find that sense of belonging. So yes, the ability to have these centers where people can come, just be in community with each other, feel comfortable in their own skin, have a moment even of connection, I think is just wonderful. I'm so happy. And, you know, since we've opened the Multicultural Center and the Umoja program, we've really seen a community of students coming together and just really, you know, creating a vibrancy and a feeling of community and connectedness there in that area. So it's been beautiful. I can't wait to see more of it. A couple of tents for some taco plates. We'll have some boba. We'll also have music. There'll be a stage. We're actually going to be visited by Jose Saria's Legacy International Imperial Court, and they'll come and sort of perform and have some sort of karaoke, or not karaoke, but like lip sync drag shows.
Wonderful.
And that will be really entertaining. There'll be, there'll be tents for resources. We'll have some community partners in the area and in and around the building, just sharing their resources and connecting students with other, you know, potential, you know, to meet their needs in the facilities that we have up here in the High Desert, but also just throughout the Inland Empire. So it should be a lot of different resources and activities from some of the clubs and support areas here on campus. So the best thing would be to reach out to me. Again, my name is Jane Montgomery, and you can email me at jane.montgomery@vvc.edu. And I will do my best to kind of network with you and figure out, you know, we'll brainstorm ideas and see how, if you're an interested community member or have a community service that you would like to, you know, engage us with, I guess would be a way to say it, absolutely. I would love to have some connections and some engagement and partnerships with folks in the area who are interested in supporting students here at VVC and, you know, maybe even mentoring or looking for pathways for students who graduate from here.
That's wonderful. That sounds great. And so, again, I'm going to encourage our listeners to join you, because what a great way to come out, meet you on April the 4th, interact with the students and see what synergies can be created to further
Absolutely.
Help support this wonderful center that's now being established on the campus. Jane, we hope that you will now consider yourself a friend of the show and, you know, check in with us from time to time, and feel free to come back and share some of the things that are going on, you know, because we'd love to hear, and letting us know how, once again, community can come alongside, engage and support. I want to thank you for spending this time with us today, and we'll look forward to joining you on April the 4th.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us again this weekend on High Desert Dialogue, Conversations with Regina and Roxanne. And if you missed past shows, don't worry, you can listen to them at talk960.com. Just click on podcasts. Since we are closing out the month of March, there's a couple things that we did want to acknowledge. March is officially National Social Work Month. This year's theme is Compassion Plus Action. Social workers are dedicated to creating positive change in our communities. Plus, also observed in the month of March, American Red Cross Month and Brain Injury Awareness Month. We'll see you next weekend.